always wonder what I'm going to say on my intros. I want to exit from this despair. I want to also give a warning to other creatives. Create like it's your last, because with the reversal of role, they're not going to stop there. If you have something meaningful to say that is going to shed light and bring happiness to the world, you better do it before the conservatives decide. And that's how I want to begin my day, every day, creating something new, interesting, and that's educating, and to expand the world instead of bringing darkness. My glow up continues. Mad shout outs to the new listeners in Georgia and in New Jersey, holding it down for a sister. I'm just so excited that I've reached 30,000 downloads and I've added new listeners thanks to the editing services of Brighton Media. It's going just so well, and it's just amazing that people really are listening to what I have to say. How cool is that? Reading is fundamental. I firmly believe that. I also believe that the more I read, the more I learn. And I've been reading and finding out or discovering very fascinating things. For a while, between Antiques Roadshow and the British version of Antiques Roadshow, I have been really fascinated by antiques, and I was going to auctions pretty strong when I was working in South Carolina, because let's not get it twisted. There was nothing going on in South Carolina at the time. And I started following Heritage Auctions, which is based in Dallas, Texas. Fast forward, I still get emails from them every now and again about fascinating lots that become available. And as of yesterday, I clicked on one of the lots. It was a book, a signed or inscribed book of Martin Luther King, that was inscribed to A. Philip Randolph. It is his stride towards freedom. One of the more fascinating bits of that was, I didn't know that A. Philip Randolph was more radical, and he was, than Martin Luther King. He didn't really necessarily want to become their brother-in-law of the white man. He just wanted to become brothers. He wanted a reconciliation and a redemption. And if you had to fight, you just had to fight. He knew that, this is Martin Luther King, that is, knew that nonviolence could shame the opponent and awaken his push him towards reconciliation. And he was right about that. This lot, one, I was tripped out about the price. It's being auctioned off, and several of the items are being auctioned off through Heritage Auctions, but I was just tripped out about this reserve amount, which is 100 grand, with the buyer's premium of $125,000. All a part of the estate from his literary agent. And I'm pausing here because I can't remember her name, because I didn't know this woman actually existed, Joan Davies. She founded it in New York in 1952. She passed away in 1997. She has an extensive collection that have recently gone up for auction, of Martin Luther King, that has gone up for auction in the last couple of weeks, and through just researching these different items, there's items like photographs, legal documents of between he and Coretta Scott King. I didn't know that Martin Luther King died without a will, and his power of attorney is being auctioned off. I found that maybe because he didn't think he was going to die, but even though he acknowledged that he would possibly die, but did he have the belief like most people that his wife would just get everything? They may have had insurance that could possibly bury him. He knew he was going to die, but he did not take the steps of estate planning because that was not a part of the mystique of being a civil rights leader. I don't know if Malcolm X also had a will. Estate planning was not in the MO of black men in the 60s, I guess, but I keep going back to that with my father was also shot to death and he didn't have a will, or his will was stolen, or the proper precautions were not taken to ensure that his estate knew the ins and out of what he actually want. Because if it was on paper, none of his living relatives had access to it, unfortunately. So I say all of this to say is that the hundreds and thousands of papers of his archive is going up for auction. I would love to get a piece of it, but I'm not sure if I want to invest that type of money. I'm willing to wait for the books to come out, but the Joan Davis Agency is just for fiction. A lot of what he wrote is nonfiction. But the fascination of what if they had lived, because it looks like Malcolm X also was chatty, wrote lots of letters and postcards, etc. Worth money, his words. Words are power. But I also would like to think they're like the old dudes that get on Twitter and would battle with people and would send out these crazy tweets to each other, and what they would have to use twit longer because they could not basically keep it to 141 characters, which I think is hysterical. But I also started looking up J. Edgar Hoover and what was his beef with civil rights movement. J. Edgar Hoover ran the FBI for 48 years, and arguably he created the FBI, because when he took it over, it was just called the Bureau of Investigation. But with Franklin Delano Roosevelt, expanded the intelligence and counter-espionage function to kind of like M8 or M6, the spy agency for England. He also thought that communists were very active in the United States to subvert our democracy. And his beef with the civil rights movement is he firmly believed that justice and equality did not extend to us. So it must have, and I think he used and abused his power to basically try to make Martin Luther King and others of the civil rights movement and the Black Panther movement use the communists that's why we should not, listen to them, and why what we were essentially saying was that the equality that extended to everyone, no matter what color, creed, sexual, whatever, it was communism and not the realization of what democracy was. He had a perverted look. He could never reconcile, and he was never forced to reconcile his white supremacy, extreme white supremacy, with the civil rights movement. It didn't have a place. It appeared to as such. He did great by expanding the fingerprint files, tracking down John Dillinger and George Machine Gun Kelly. Fine. However, but his unwillingness to protect the national treasures, Martin Luther King, as well as Malcolm X, is arguably the major mistake, because he let, I think they firmly knew, because they were following those guys, they firmly knew that those guys were going to do what they do because they had been watching them. And they allowed it to happen. They basically, I don't know, it's not, do I honestly think there was a conspiracy where either the CIA or the FBI paid off the assassins of Martin Luther King or Malcolm X to enact their acts of violence? No, I don't. But I think their inaction, because they knew it was going to happen and they didn't forewarn or protect those brothers, that is what the, it's not a conspiracy. It's just basically the truth. And we've seen it in other, where they, you're watching the watchers and then you see what's going to happen and you don't do anything. You don't intervene because it takes care of your problem. You think it takes care of your problem, but their message just simply goes on and on. Because right is right. What they were fighting for, or what they represented, was equality for all men and our right to just exist. And even though, because you could not reconcile your white supremacy with that, because white supremacy has no place in a true blue democracy. But I've been reading all of that and just finding out who these people were, from the Joan Davies of the world, and why Martin Luther King and even Malcolm X's postcards are being auctioned off and are being going to the estate, because I'm very much fascinated about it. And I'm trying to make sure that my show, although it's called Tim Fro is Reading, I do read a lot as preparation for this show, and I make commentary on these things. And I hope the listening audience, when the people that listen to this show, are always fascinated by new and fascinating things that I'm new, I'm very nerdy things that I'm fascinated about, but that you'll keep coming back because you want to find out, oh, what has she found out that we didn't know of before? That simple things like in the upcoming, the next part of the segment, about that Bootsy Collins was a part of James Brown's bass section in his band before he actually was then discovered and started being managed by George Clinton of Parliament. Those types of things, and how funky James Brown was, you know, his riff, big horns, bass line drums. And he was a rich old dude when he passed away. But I don't think he had a will either. But, and he had a whole bunch of kids fighting on him. Took him a minute before he was actually buried. I have to look that up, because I wonder how long it took him for them to actually finally enter, in, for him to be interred. So we don't live in Africa, where I think Demetri L. Lucas basically said that it can be up to a year before people are finally, the final funeral is done, and it's a whole basically celebration and event. That was not the issue with James Brown's estate. It's because they were held up in litigation, and that's why that man wasn't buried in a timely manner. But that's our American, unfortunately, the American, Black American way. So I am enjoying a very restful midweek, and I was listening to one of my favorite podcasters, Demetri L. Lucas, and she has been recounting her move to Ghana. And if you haven't heard, Blackfoot is happening. We've noticed that there has been a surge, what they call reverse migration, where we have returned to the South. But since basically 2019, 2020, with the murders of both George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and then all of these mass shootings involving races running up on us in our churches and at the grocery store, Black folks are just getting tired. It's more than just leaving the North and coming back South. It's basically leaving the United States altogether. There are whole YouTube channels devoted to this. There are people that have dedicated their blogs about this, and the top reasons that they're giving is pretty interesting. Samuel L. Jackson, Ludacris, and Stevie Wonder are some of the top celebs that have just basically thrown up the peace sign. And back in 2018, there were a lot of people ahead of, and I remember this is one of my first assignments that I wrote for Fiverr about the celebration of the 400th year anniversary of first time enslaved people landing on this soil. And it's been crap ever since then. And it's there's an article that I'm going to actually put in my extended podcast notes, is the journalist Denine L. Brown writes Why She Bounced. She said, as a reporter for more than 35 years, I watched and researched and wrote with a sense of journalistic distance while consuming the emotions of every tragedy. Each video was terribly sad. The 2019 police killing of Elijah McClain in Colorado ripped me to my core. I replayed the videos of McClain, 23, a peace-loving vegetarian who played his violin to shelter cats, pleading for the police to stop hurting him and just let him walk home in peace. We couldn't walk the streets, drive, study, go to the grocery store, sleep without fear of getting killed. One night while my trip to Ghana, my driver made a U-turn in traffic and was stopped by a police officer. My stomach dropped. It was the middle of the night and I was terrified. I watched as the driver got out of the car and walked toward the officer standing on the side of the road. The driver motioned to the officer, talking with his hands, explaining he was lost and apologizing for making the U-turn. The officer listened. After a pause, the officer said, "I forgive you. Go about your way." I want this kind of freedom, to live in a country where traffic stops end peacefully. I want the ability to move among people who look like me. I want to engage in intellectual debates without having to explain the history of this country's racism. I know no place is perfect, but I want to live in a country where racism is not a constant threat, which is why I have decided to eventually leave America. When or where I will go, I can't say for sure, but I'm definitely finally ready. Stevie Wonder basically put it bluntly. And one of the Afro-American studies at Howard basically said he's tired of being othered. Stevie Wonder was like, "I'm tired of my children's children have to explain or beg for people to like them or to understand them." And the shift, especially during Trump's presidency, everybody was looking for a way out. And I know I was. And I've been thinking about this a lot because where would I go? The top places, of course, are any place warm. Costa Rica, go down to Belize with Rihanna in them. And of course, Ghana and the rest of the western coast of Africa from which we were stolen. But it's just, or you can do what I've done, become more reclusive. And I'm just, because I'm tired of explaining why it's not safe here. And even though I own this house, I hit that note every single month, but there are people that are willing to roll up on me and kill me where I stand because they have decided that I don't belong here. And why do people think that? Why are people in such a hurry to scam me and such a hurry to take what that I work for? And I know I could get so much more in so many other countries where the cost of living are only a tenth of what it is here and still have a bougie quality of life, still have access to health care. And I know it would come with different problems, but I, after going through this mess here, I mean, I think I can handle a lot more. The ties that I have here, people can come with me, or like it's been for the majority of my professional life, they don't. They can stay where they are, and I would still be just as happy going where I need to go. So, a lot, people have to be very concerned that a lot of Black professionals and a lot of Black young people are just tired of the fight because the fight is rigged, and they're just, they need a break. They're burnt out. So, beware, because we're taking our intellectual energy, our creativity, and our funds out of the country because y'all are acting crazy and like you don't need us. Well, fine. Don't need us. We going where we are absolutely safe and welcome. We are returning home to Mother Africa.
Okay, let's have some Dream Girls fun.
Yes, come on, okay. Ask me.
Wait, what? So it was 41 years
Can
ago.
Can you believe it?
No.
41 and I'm only 40 myself.
Listen! Let me tell you about my moment. Earlier, we added it up. Look at this!
I remember that. That was another great center stage moment. I remember taking that picture, and we were so happy because we knew we had a hit on our hands. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
I'm really having a moment because I wish I could have been able to see that.
Aww.
And then I was gonna say, I was born the year it came out.
Yes.
Do you remember what your audition was like?
I'll never forget my audition because I remember that day walking into, it was 890 Broadway, Michael Bennett's big theater, and I walked in there and I was walking behind Loretta Devine, because Loretta Devine was already, you know, becoming Loretta Devine. And these women in the room, they were not singers, they were singers, baby. And they were, the building was literally levitating off of the concrete. That's how wonderful they were. And then there was me. And everybody was doing their whole thing, and they asked me to sing. And they said, just, you know, sing something from church. So I sang Ave Maria. They were very quiet. I think they were thinking something more in the Baptist vein. And they did not know that I was a little Episcopalian girl. So I sang my little song, and I sat down at the end of the day, because this was hours now. At the end of this, they said, very dramatically, if I call your name, it's your day. If I don't, it's not.
It was dramatic and, like
yeah,
that.
Yes, it was very dramatic. And then they said, Loretta Devine, duh. Ramona Brooks, and I'm getting ready to leave. And Cheryl Lee Ralph. When we did Dreamgirls, baby, our work was step, touch, step, touch.
You want a show?
Come on.
Oh, you want me to come too? Oh, Lord.
Yeah, you can.
We need some Dream Girl magic. You got yours.
Oh.
I can't believe I get to do this.
Girl, now this is not any cheap boa, so you know I'm keeping it.
Yes, ma'am, you better. So are we tossing it around the neck? I'm following your lead. You the original Dream Girl, baby.
Now,
not me.
All you have to remember,
okay,
when you move, and you know this,
yes, ma'am.
It's like
Bevel?
You want them, thank you, and you want them to see that you're wonderful, that you love being here on stage. Come on.
We'll make it happen.
Now make it sway.
Oh, oh, oh. Yes, ma'am.
And you look at them, look up. That's right. Come on, sing, baby.
Woo.
Now wait, here we go.
Dream girl.
Look up.
Dream girl.
Look down.
Dream girls will not leave you. Come on!
I know you got your dreams. And guess what? I'll be there.
Oh, she's here, y'all!
That was Jennifer Hudson getting her full life with the EGOT, Cheryl Lee Ralph. That moment was just so touching, and I had to replay it for the listening audience. Music transcends us and also brings people together, and it is obvious from this show that, number one, Jennifer Hudson is always ready to sing. And that girl can sing. I realized, and I didn't realize until I saw the highlight video. I'm going to put this clip in the show notes as well as the clip where she talks to, it's just like a highlights reel, but she also, you got to go to YouTube to look it up, but she also talked to Simon Cowell about she did not win. And I thought about that. I'm like, yeah, that's right. That was like, I always thought that was like one of the biggest mistakes from America's Got Talent, but it really wasn't, because it was her singing Barry Manilow song and the range and how she sung it. Like, and I am telling you, that's how she got the Dreamgirls gig. And she went on to have, and still is having, her moment. And I didn't know she turned 41 this year. She looks amazing. So does Sheryl Lee Ralph. She did that when she was, what, in her 20s? Or maybe she was in her 20s? And she still is beautiful, because black doesn't crack. And it just was just so amazing to watch her get all gushy over her. And I've forgotten, but and it's obvious when Loretta Devine did a cover, Until You Come Back to Me, on P-Valley, but you almost forget her extensive stellar singing career and how absolutely amazing it is. And I just love the fact that, I think my dog likes music too, because she is a superstar herself. But I realize that she responds to my voice, but she responds positively to just beautiful music too. And I've been playing a lot of music as of late. But this is one of those shows, I'm not getting a kickback for this. If you get the chance to watch the clips, and watch them often on my extended blog post notes, as well as go to YouTube and catch it. Hopefully it's on ABC or NBC and not on that other crazy gaslighting network called Fox. But this is a show that if you want to see Jennifer Hudson get her whole life, and she has some amazing guest stars on the show, Sheryl Lee Ralph, just to say the least. But you got to watch this show and just enjoy the music like I have.
With such a icon of American entertainment and American culture in general, was mind-blowing. It still is. This whole opportunity from start to now has just felt like some kind of dream, really.
Yeah, I don't know if he feels he gets his due or not, you know, but we're talking about somebody who's, you know, how many people have done what he's done? I can only think of one, and that's Charlie Chaplin, you know, and he's a black man in this country. You know, that's a different tier for me. One of my cousins made me cry this morning because I have a big family. I'm from Virginia, and I have 10 aunts, you know, I have uncles too, thankfully, but I have 10 aunts, and when I first moved to New York, only one of them, you know, for the first few years would reach out to me and check in on me. And she just encouraged me or whatever. And every time she signed off from that phone call, she'd be like, I love you. And just remember, just like Tyler Perry, you can always write your own, right?
Wow, wow, wow.
And to be at this juncture, you know, with him, you know, and Soleil, more specifically with him, I can't speak to that other than the story. I just, you know, it feels divine. It feels like the alignment is real, and I'm just grateful.
Wow.
Grateful.
You know, shout out to your aunt. I feel like she spoke
all
that
10.
Into
all 10. All 10.
Yeah, she definitely spoke.
And she's
that.
Not. She's no longer with us. You know, so it meant something to me to read that message from my cousin this morning.
Wow.
And it just kind of centered me. You know,
it's beautiful.
Yeah. Feel great.
Absolutely. And it is divine. The hands are always I saw somewhere where you said that you enjoyed directing this versus other things. What was it about directing this particular story that was, I guess, more enjoyable than usual?
Everything I've done in the beginning has been about the work, and I knew I had this piece in my back pocket for all these years. 27 years I was holding
27 years.
27 years I was holding on to it, and realized, you know, at some point I'm going to get to do this, and I'm going to really enjoy doing it when I do. But for what I had to do in the beginning, because as a black person, especially in American Hollywood, if you have a flop, you don't get a lot of opportunities. So this being a period piece, and a few years ago, this thing could have never happened, you know, as recently as 10 years. So I wanted to make sure I was doing what I knew worked with my audience,
right,
to reaffirm the hits, to make my studio and business concrete so that I can get to this place. So when I got into directing Jazzman and having this incredible talent pool to work with, I was able to relax and just enjoy every shot. I wanted every shot to be a photograph. They came with such intention. They were intentional on everything in understanding the characters and being the characters. Mm-hmm. It just made it all amazing.
No, it felt real. I started off our conversation by telling you guys what happened to me. I pegged it wrong. I did. And I said it on TV, so we can actually go get that clip. Unfortunately for me, but I wanted to talk to you about you specifically, Sela, because you're playing this character,
mm-hmm,
but in real life, this is who you are as well. Is this an art mimics life moment for you?
I remember the first conversation that we had when you called. I'd sent in my tape, and Tyler called me to just let me know that he loved my audition, which in and of itself, I was like, okay, well, if nothing else, wow. But I have found, you know, our industry is based, you know, it's based so much on the visual of what we look like. And living in America, race is very polarizing, white and black. So I think mixed race people kind of find themselves, especially in our industry,
right,
having to, you know, pass as one thing or another, fit into someone's box of what they are. And I think I can count on my hand, one hand, the number of opportunities I've had to audition for roles that are actually me.
Mm.
So to take up space as myself in a story is an opportunity that I have had twice in my professional career.
There's so much judgment for a lot of the people who made that choice in the past, mm-hmm, to pass.
I have to admit something. So I saw the trailer, and I'm talking about it on my show. I host a nightly entertainment show. Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
That is Tyrone chats with on E-Talk chats with Tyler Perry, Joshua Boone, and Saleha Pfeiffer in their roles with Tyler Perry's new movie on Netflix, A Jazzman's Blues. The takeaway on that clip is he's had this show because, you know, he writes, directs, produces everything. He's had this in his back pocket for 27 years. He waited until he actually has one of the largest black-owned production company and studios in Georgia, right outside of Atlanta, built on a former Confederate army base, if that doesn't blow your mind. But it tells the story of a young woman who basically is pimped out by her mother, who is passing for white in Hopewell, Georgia. I took away from it, although how Jennifer Hudson's show is very inspirational and filled with music, this show is also it's problematic, but it's also, he made the reference to, he basically could enjoy every shot. He knew he couldn't make this show 10 years ago. He had to go through a lot of Madeas and reunions to get to the place where he actually could recreate this. It's a nod to The Color Purple, the juke joint, the singing, the jazz. And it's also a nod to the fact how wonderful the story is told. I think this is one of the most cohesive stories that I've seen for Tyler Perry. I had remarked to my sister how it seemed a little bit darker than what you're used to getting from Tyler Perry. But on another level, it's probably one of the best and tightest movies I've seen or productions I've seen ever, he's ever produced. Kudos to him. But it's a story of a woman who basically is passing for white, and her mother, to protect her own well-being, basically lies to the white husband that the black dude played Bayou, played by Joshua Boone, whistled at her. And that's how she, because she knew that both of them were in love. And it all comes, the story, entire story comes back full circle. He basically runs away for his life, makes it big in Chicago, goes up there with his brother, who's always felt jealous. And I didn't understand the ramifications. It was like the light-skinned, taller brother who played the horn always had, it was a bit of sibling rivalry. And he could not understand why he was still second best, even though he was the lighter skin and oldest brother. He basically rats his brother out. And when they come back, because he came back to basically help his mother out, and he ended up, the brother ended up telling on him and saying that he was coming back, and they end up getting him and lynching him. And it was his brother's fault. And I still am having a hard time understanding the reason, number one, why the mother was so hell-bent. She just was basically trying to protect her status and her comfort, and her own daughter be damned. And then how the brother basically riding on his own brother, although he knew he was going to get killed. Because even though he was not there, it would never, he still would not get or be a star, because he was a drug addict and he wasn't as talented as his brother. So by him removing the brother, that was just so drug addled. It didn't make any sense to me. And I felt bad that, and it was just such a waste. What was also a waste was the fact that the young woman, she basically stayed in a loveless marriage, had the dude that got lynched kid, didn't know that he, who his father was, until the grandmother came and dropped off the letters towards the end of her life. I'm sure she blamed this woman for her son's death. Not rightfully so, because unfortunately in the South, and to a certain extent, dying by the hands, an unarmed black man dying at the hands of law enforcement is not a new thing. And it wasn't then, and it still is not a new thing today. But he loved her against his better judgment and against all odds. And the fact that his own blood, for some unforeseen reasons, was willing to sacrifice his life, the brother's life, and still get nowhere, to me is just such, it's not ironic, it's just so sad. But as far as something great to watch, A Jazz Man Blues on Netflix. I don't usually rate shows, but I actually rated this one because it was absolutely something amazing to watch. I'm also going to tag and put this also in extended show notes. Just a conversation between Tyler Perry. The effects of colorism is an outspring of racism in this country. And just looking at these stars, Celia Pfeiffer, she even when in her mixed raceness, she still looked black to me. You could tell that she was a black woman. And I'm like, are y'all white people just that stupid? Y'all could, what did y'all think, she was Italian? I don't know. But she's very fair skinned, but you can still tell she is mixed. And I don't know. I'm wondering how women like her pass. Now, the lady at the end, because it looks like she never went outside, maybe. The older woman at the end of the story definitely was a Caucasian woman, but you could tell the younger girl was definitely, either you had to just fool yourself and think she was of Mediterranean descent, but definitely she was on the south side of the Mediterranean. I'm just saying, y'all. I'm like, how stupid, racist, and people, white supremacists will blind themselves if because they get some type of fetish or some type of prize. It just beyond me. As I walk through the valley of shadow, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left. Cause I've been blasting and laughing so long that even mama thinks my mind is gone. But I never crossed a man that I didn't deserve it. Maybe like, treat like a punk, who knows and heard of it. You better watch how you talking and where you walking, or you and your homies might be lying in the chalk. I really hate to trip, but I gotta lope as they cloak to see myself in pistol smoke, fool. I'm the kind of G the little homies want to be on my knees in the night saying prayers in the street light. So that is just my feeble attempt to sing Gangster's Paradise. And this is just my homage to the passing, recent passing of Coolio. He basically passed away, unknown causes or unconfirmed causes, at a friend's house this past, within the last 24 hours, 36 hours. I didn't know until this morning that he had been grinding for 15 years before he hit it. And he was concerned that everyone would just know him from Gangster's Paradise, which not only put him on the charts, but also made the movie Dangerous Mind, living a living, breathing thing 31 years later. Just because of the success from that song. He would go on to produce 8 other studio albums and sell over 17 million records. An amazing life cut short. Rest in peace, the great Coolio. And for those of you that are just joining, this is Tim Fro is listening to Her Daddy's Records. Hi, I'm your host, Felicia Baxter. This particular show is going to be, we're going to be listening to Funk Through the Ages. We're going to be talking, listening to some George Clinton, from P-Funk to Parliament. He had an annihilation humanist management style, which means he was probably all toked up or wilding out on some psychedelics, and he basically would disband and reband the band and create even larger and crazier than life music. But there's also a lot of other funk masters like Bootsy and the African Music Machine that have been the background of the funk movement for a number of years, like the Dap Band. Oh, I didn't even include the Dap Band. I need to add them. But this current list is over 201 minutes of pure funk nation. I got Nerd, I got Cameo, and also James Brown, who I didn't really consider a funk-tastic master. I got M'Tume. This is just so much music to enjoy. And also, I Want My Daddy's Records playlist is basically blowed up. You got to navigate to that on iTunes and stream often. I hope they have control of their masters. I hope that we all get a bit of funk history by listening to this show. And as always, thank you for joining me. And I hope this will find you and let you get your groove on if you're waiting in traffic or wherever you are. And thank you for listening. Bootsy Collins, and I think his name is Catfish Williams or something like that, were both bass guitarists in James Brown's band. I always wonder how R&B and soul all contributed to the foundation of funk, and how they incorporated all of that into disco, but how all of those genres continue where disco basically died out in the late 70s, early 80s. So with that said, let's enjoy African Music Machine, Blackwater Gold. One of the things I do love about funk is the heavy horns and the bass. I don't want to play this too loud because I don't want to get accused of copyright infringement, and that just brings up my whole sync licensing wants and how much that's going to actually cost. But Pick Up the Pieces by the Average White Band, I'm actually playing that now. But there's bands like BT Express, the Brand New Heavies, the Brothers Johnson, that all have the consistent funkadelic kind of rhythm to it, and it makes, but they all have their own unique sound. And I had forgotten how cool Commodore and how much of a funk band they were until they crossed over into the mainstream pop scene. So again, navigate to iTunes to listen to this extensive playlist if you haven't been able to tune into my live amp show. And just drop me a line and have suggestions or for additions and deletions. I greatly appreciate, as long as the comments are not too trolly. Right now I'm playing Cameo on amp, and prior to that I had played the Brand New Heavies, and I was remarked on the influence of R&B, soul, and funk on the hip hop genre. Each is distinctive, all influenced by each other, but still its own super international entity. And that's the great thing about music. You can see how it influences. It doesn't cancel out the previous or the greatest collaborations ever between some of the hip hop and funk greats, Bootsy and Far Side, etc. And you can still see the influences of those giants within the music of the younger generations. But it they still does not cancel out the greatness of the previous generation. That's what music is to me. And I wonder if you guys agree. Let me know. Drop me a line at tinfroisreading@gmail.com and let me know about that particular comment. I'm taking the time to record this episode on a great Tuesday. It's Taco Tuesday, and I'm wrapping up my amp show. It's all funk all day, well, since 4 o'clock. And through my research and building up the playlist, I have rediscovered Parliament and the Funkadelics. But then there's a rapper, Sativa, that I had no idea who she was until she showed up on some stank and I want some. The whole skunk of it all is they're talking about weed. And if anyone knows anything about marijuana, I was actually at home in Virginia recently, and I pulled up in my truck, and this other yoked out white dude was in the next car. He had his blunt in his hand. He was just chilling, riding along. I don't think weed is legal in Virginia, but, and technically, is that open carry considered? But that distinct odor of stank weed brings back and brings to mind this song that I discovered as I was curating this playlist. And I can't even smoke because I have asthma, but I didn't want any. And it took a minute to get that stank out of my truck. I had put the windows up and circulated the air, had to speed up to get away from him to get that out of my air filters. So, no, it made me want to look up to see if Sativa has done anything since she dropped this single with Parliament in 2004. And what has she done since? Maybe some underground stuff, maybe some independent stuff. But it's this rap, or her collaboration, again, the effective influence of funk and hip hop, but the complete separateness of and how both of them prop each other up without annihilating either. That is some gangster stuff right there. So look up Sativa and let me know what you think about her rap skills. Does she have bars or does she need work? Searching every corner of my life, searching for. That is Stormzy from the Global Citizen Festival 2022 that popped off this past weekend in Ghana. And from the looks of it, it was the bomb. Usher outperformed himself, looking like King T'Challa. Mariah Carey in all of her gold finery in Central Park. I basically fast forwarded to all of those great performances. I mean, after the previous section when I'm talking about the music, that was just a little bit of a riff off of the YouTube live streaming, recorded live stream of that particular festival. I learned about it from Dimitri L. Lucas, and I'm actually very glad that I basically looked it up online because the music was lit and the energy of the crowd was amazing. And y'all need to check it out. The YouTube video is actually in my show notes on WordPress, but you could check it out under Global Citizen 2022 Ghana on YouTube at your convenience. There seems to be a whole bunch of donkeyness going on, and I had saved this discussion about the political gaslighting. I actually saved this almost 2 weeks ago. I'm really tired of the MAGA maggots. I'm tired of them gaslighting us. This comes from Huffington Post, where this fool chump calls Biden's speech offensive and a threat to democracy when he's been doing the same crap for a number of years. But Letitia James and Merrick Garland has something for him and his old fraudulent family's butt. She's coming for him. Both of them are getting ready to break their foot off to them. And I firmly believe that. But just because someone calls you out on your illegal dealings and your own shenanigans, they're basically trying to flip the script. I don't think basically solidifying or guaranteeing the validity of the 2020 elections is against democracy. What you basically dumbasses tried to do was basically overthrow the government. Nothing but sedition, nothing but a corrupt human being that should never have been elected president. And now that the photos and the paintings of President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama are now installed, I wish that we could basically forget the previous 4 years and remember what should have been and could have been, and we could have moved on. But then everybody seems to be tripping. Nia Long's fiance, I think he's still his fiance. What's this fool's name? I have to go back and look it up. I didn't even know who he was until this story broke. Let's see. Emi Aduka, he was the head coach for the Boston Celtics. She basically pulled up and moved to freezing butt Boston to be with him. And he basically is crapping where he eats. He had an affair with the vice president of the organization. Who does that? That is the craziest thing I've ever heard. And it's not her fault that an icon of a 30-year era got cheated on. Her being married to him would not have prevented him from being a dumbass and cheating on him with that man's wife. And he's lucky he didn't get fired, because they suspended him for a year, but that's essentially like getting fired. But I'm sure it's suspended with pay, because he gets paid whether he coaches or not, but he could have been terminated. And that's too bad on him. Who wants to cheat on Nia Long? That's some dumb crap right there. And then Brett Favre is caught up in this whole welfare scandal. They basically diverted funds that should have been to provide health care in the poorest state in the union. That stuff was diverted to provide a volleyball facility and some stuff for his alma mater. I don't think we've heard the last of that. Charges have been rendered against high ups in the government, including potentially the governor, and everybody is snitching. So that, to me, has landed Brett Favre, of all people, former Green Bay Packer quarterback, former Sportsman of the Year, on my Donkey of the Week list. And I can't make this stuff up. How you go from Sportsman of the Year, multi-million dollar quarterback, to welfare king or welfare queen? I just, girl, people need to stop acting stupid. That's all I want them to do. Make better decisions. Stop gaslighting people and pay your freaking taxes. Why not? Let's just start there. Why not? Let's just start there. The hijab is an Arabic word meaning barrier or partition. In Islam, it has a broader meaning. It is a principle of modesty and includes behavior as well as dress for both males and females. The most visible form of hijab is the head covering that many Muslim women wear. This goes out to Masa Amini, a 22-year-old woman that was killed in Iran for her hijab being too loose. Watch, listen to this from NBC News about the protests that are spreading across the world, definitely in Iran, and the crackdown that the police there are warning of.
Tonight, violent unrest in Iran, sparked by the death of a young woman in police custody, continuing now for the 10th night. Iran State TV saying 41 people, protesters and police have been killed since demonstrations began on September 17th following Mahsa Amini's death. But Norway-based group Iran Human Rights say at least 76 have died. Many arrests are being made, even during the day when protests aren't happening. Security agents identifying people they believe were on the streets at night. According to the Committee to Protect Journalists, at least 20 journalists have been arrested, many of them women. On Saturday, Iran's president issuing a threat on state TV, saying that Iran must, quote, deal decisively with those who oppose the country's security and tranquility. The Associated Press reports that according to their count of official statements by authorities, more than 1,200 demonstrators have been arrested. The number could be much higher, the government cutting the country off from communications with the outside world. Last week, blocking access to the internet and messaging apps like WhatsApp and Telegram, limiting Instagram, one of the last remaining social media platforms.
Once you crack down and you want to shut down your country, you are telling everybody, I have something bad to hide.
So when you shut down social media, you have something bad to hide. These regimes are not going to get away with trying to staunch freedoms in general. I mean, there is freedom, I know, in Islam. It is a peaceful religion, but what they're doing seems so far away from the tenets and teachings of Muhammad and the Quran. I think they really need to reevaluate their response to this woman and take responsibility for this wrong turn. And what is the purpose of the morality police? That doesn't make any sense to me. And why are you so conservative and staunch? And is it worth imploding your society over an erroneous interpretation of a covering that is supposed to protect women? I know that their God and what their beliefs are, they're going to be judged. But a lot of us, or a lot of people, or the world is sitting in judgment of them because they made some wrong turn somewhere. The peaceful tenets of the teachings of Muhammad is so against what they're doing and what they have done. That young woman should not have died because of a head covering. What the purpose is to show her modesty. Who is to say it wasn't tight enough? What is going on here? And why aren't y'all more focused on making sure your people are not starving, making sure the lights are on, they got clean water? What happened to providing the basic minimum to allow your people to live and to prosper in your country? What about all of that? It seems to me to be an imbalance, and y'all gonna need to correct that while you're trying to correct the morality of your people, when it's obvious these morality police sounds like they're male chauvinists and misogynists, and there's no place for them in that society, in a modern society. Maybe you need to reevaluate that and making sure that the laws that you have are really in line truly with the tenets, the peaceful tenets of your religion. And this is me as a Christian basically calling y'all out on y'all shenanigans as Muslims. Think about that. And also reevaluate and take into consideration why this young woman should have never died. And as an end, I am recording on Taco Tuesday. I just had some real flame broil beef tacos from, I made the had the tomatoes and the peppers, burrito peppers from my own garden, and they were actually good. But I'm gonna have to take some Pepcid and drink, probably eat a little bit more sour cream to take this heat off of my tongue as I go and dream of Speedy Gonzalez dogs running wild and running around happy as they attack me for my food. This has probably been one of the most productive days of my recording. I'm recording on time as far as Quartz Bar. I listened to some great music. I've made some commentary on some really amazing things, some pop culture. I'm going to probably save Quartz Bar for Donkey of the Day and music selection. And then the big show is about what I'm reading, what I'm writing, and I'm planning on doing a whole segment on the rare book auction at Heritage in Dallas, Texas. Martin Luther King's literary agent, her estate, basically put up multiple items that she owned, like signed copies of a book. I saw one of his rare books, signed copy of one of his books, going and it's $100,000, and the price is climbing. I don't have that kind of scratch. And I don't know if I would basically, if I did have that kind of scratch, would I drop that amount of money on a book, even if it is inscribed by Martin Luther King? But that also brings me up into inheritance. I have been talking about one of the things that I inherited from my father, his extensive musical collection. And as I unloaded it from the back of my truck, I basically reflected on that. And I just want to say that it's an honor that I have been instilled and entrusted with his prized record collection. But to all of the other people that want to basically slither their way and see how they can weasel money from me, I don't got it. That's to everybody excluding the IRS. Ain't got it for you. Don't ask me for it. But I will be using, just watch me as I utilize those funds, etc., and continue my glow up. Because that's, I think, was the whole intent of him leaving me these things. So I'm having fun. I hope you had fun listening to the podcast. I hope you tune into not only the podcast, but also to me on AMP as I continue to create great playlists and have some great music as people drive home or first thing in the morning, leaving or coming to work. That's what I plan on doing. So. So that's how we're going to end this episode, and I'm going to end it with a positive word. I used to scoff at people making this statement, because of its simplicity, or maybe because it sounded more like an admonishment that I was being everything but kind. But then when I started investigating it for myself, that's when I realized that I was confusing politeness with kindness. Politeness is a fake, superficial manner in which There's no required investment, no self-reflection. But being kind is an adjective. It is an action. If you're kind to yourself first, it's like exercise memory. You will continue and be kind to others. Let that sit with you for a while. I'm going to try to be kind to myself. I'll be kind to others. It's very simple, and you got to repeat it. Lean into the spirit of a new year by counting your blessings, giving to others, and spreading happiness. I know I will. And this episode or this podcast is my means to spread joy and happiness and light and enlightenment. There's so much going on with aggression and just meanness. But if I can leave you with one small positive thought, start your day with that, that can change everything for you. And just basically change your day. Don't forget to check out Dale's Angels Inc. for the notes on this podcast, as well as other works by CQM in that are and other contributors that are in work or in being edited right now. Also, check out my Instagram feed, Tenfro is Reading. You can check me out on Facebook, Tenfro is Reading Book Club, as well as my YouTube channel, Tenfro is Reading and Eating. And what I'm just chatting and streaming at TV Food Wine Girl on Twitter. Navigate to Writer's Block Coffee or shipabagofdicks.com. Use my promo code TenfroCoffee or TenfroGotJokes respectively to get a percentage off of your order. Don't forget to drop me a line at tenfrowasreading@gmail.com. All non-trolling messages may be actually read online, and you can do the same if you are in Podbean or Anchor or wherever you listen to the podcast. And again, shedding light and positivity. And I hope you guys enjoyed this episode as much as I've enjoyed creating it. Until next time, bye.